In April 2025, the biotech company Colossal Bioscience claimed it had achieved de-extinction for the dire wolf, a megafauna hunting wolf species that died out around 10,000 years ago. But does the prospect of new technologies resurrecting extinct species undermine efforts to prevent extinctions in the first place? That's the intriguing proposition our next guest has looked into. Dr. Christopher Lane is a research fellow within the Department of Philosophy at Macquarie University, and he's the co-author of a recent study in the journal Biological Conservation, which is called De-Extinction and the Risk of Moral Hazard. Chris Lane, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Fantastic to be here.
So, Chris, what does de-extinction actually mean?
Yeah, so de-extinction isn't just one thing. It's a set of different techniques for bringing back extinct biological variation. Now, there are cases in which de-extinction in some way has been occurring for a very long time. There were attempts to backbreed a extinct variant of cattle all the way going back into the 1930s. So they were looking at all these different types of cattle and trying to breed into a version of cattle which had been extinct for over 500 years, so aurochs. So in one sense, de-extinction has been around for a while. But really, de-extinction, as we're now talking about it these days, it's the use of advanced biotechnology to introduce genetic variation from the remnants of extinct species. So most famously, using frozen remains to attempt to identify the entire genetic sequence of an extinct species and slowly reintroduce that genetic variation back into an existing species. So you're not actually taking the DNA from the remains and then sort of plugging it into somewhere. You're using those remains to try and identify the sequence, redesign the sequence in the sense of identifying what it was, and then stitching it back into a existing population which resembles or is closely, more accurately, closely related to that extinct species. So recreate some sort of proxy for that.
So with what Colossal Biosciences did with the direwolf, Time magazine described that as scientifically seismic. Is that the process you just described then? Is that what Colossal Biosciences did with the direwolf?
Yeah, so they have put together a direwolf sequence. They had two different direwolves with a fairly significant distance in time between them. They sequenced their genomes as best as possible, and it's very impressive work. And then they identified some genes which they thought were the key features of what they thought a direwolf should have. And they ended up introducing 20 variations for 14 genes. Now, that's not a huge amount, but, you know, in one sense, it's seismic because it is a really, really, really big step. In another sense, it is like 20 changes to create 14 genes, which will have some sort of morphological difference. And so here you get the tension that's sort of played out in the public sphere. Yes, it's impressive science, and yes, it's a major step, but as well, the idea that identifying the genes from two individuals and then having 14 genes introduced into a grey wolf, whether that then equates the resurrection of a species, there's quite a gulf between those two interpretations. And so you can be sympathetic to both, and we need to sort of calibrate our, you know, response to these things.
And I can imagine it's not impossible that biotech companies might overstate some of these things or simplify them in their press releases and the like.
Exactly, exactly. You've got to communicate to people about these things and the junction between, oh, it's a big step, but as well, it's not, you know, immediately we've resurrected the direwolves, we're going to have a population which is running free. That's an exact replica, including all the genetic variation that occurred at the time, or even all the genetic variation that differs from a grey wolf. These are going to be quite different things.
So let's move on to the focus of your study, which is this concern about moral hazard associated with de-extinction projects. Can you give us an example of these sort of moral hazard concerns that have been raised by the work of Colossal Biosciences or other projects?
Yeah, so let's start first with just what a moral hazard is. So a moral hazard is a case in which someone or some institution takes on more risky behavior because they believe that a new policy or technology in some way mitigates the risk of that behavior or compensates for the risk of the behavior. So let's start out with a more intuitive example. Say, I don't know if you skateboard, but say you and I, we get out health insurance and we suddenly decide, oh, I've got health insurance. I'll take up skateboarding as, you know, someone in my case approaching their 40s and has never done it before, you know, because if I get injured, I've got health insurance. So there, the health insurance is something which is leading me to feel okay taking on more risky behavior. Wow. And so there might be something self-undermining about that. Now, in the case of various technologies, this worry has come up a lot, particularly in very public debates around the use of climate change mitigation technologies. So things like solar radiation modification or carbon capture, there were a lot of worries around these technologies then yielding a sort of tacit permission to continue emitting carbon.
Right. If there's a tech solution for it, then we don't need to worry about conservation in the present day.
Yeah, exactly. So immediately once de-extinction was proposed, there was this worry that people come to the belief that extinction isn't permanent, they're going to be much more likely to view it as permissible.
Mm-hmm. So this is the concern that's popped up and you've decided to test it. So Chris, what did you do and what did you find?
Yeah, so in this case of moral hazard, it's some sort of form of compensation. So we wanted to contrast the proposed compensation, which is the introduction of de-extinction, with existing methods of talking about environmental compensation. So the idea is that we already could do some form of environmental compensation, but what's interesting is this new technology. Uh-huh. So we come up with a couple of different cases, which we made up. It's a scenario where a company will build something that will cause the extinction of an existing threatened species. So in one case, we have a threatened frog called the dusky gopher frog, which is in America. And we say, there's a company which is going to create a new port. This port needs a highway. The highway is going to go through that frog community and cause them to be extinct. But the public will gain some sort of economic bonus for that. And as well, we're going to invest in preserving other species. And then we ask, in that scenario, do you think that's okay? Do you think that's permissible? Do you think projects like this should happen? And then in another case, we go, well, how about the company's going to do that, but instead they're going to sequence that frog population. They're then going to reintroduce that genetic data into related species and release them into a habitat which is much more suitable. Yeah, right. And ask whether there's any difference between these two cases. Does the proposal of de-extinction make people feel more comfortable with allowing these large-scale projects to cause extinctions?
Very interesting. So what's the answer?
It turns out that, in a way, it was unsurprising for us that there was no difference between these cases because a lot of research had already been done on the climate change technologies, and they equally had found that there was no effect for proposing the technology. In some cases, in the climate change case, it was actually the inverse. The drastic nature of this technology actually being used and how dangerous it was, it seems, made people want to mitigate more climate change. But in this case, it was just basically even. But there was a really interesting and slightly worrying thing, which we did find in the data as well. And that was the people who were most okay with allowing for the frog to go extinct in the de-extinction case, they were also the people most likely to think that the species could fully be recreated. So while there was an effect between the cases, we had this quite interesting correlation that within the de-extinction case, the people who thought it was okay, they thought it was the same species. Now, there's a couple of ways this could be interpreted. It could be interpreted as these are people who are okay with extinction from the start, and they're just looking for an excuse. Following the Direwolf announcement, you had the Secretary for Interior in the US, who I think is someone who was very okay with extinction to start off with, going, we can weaken the laws, just call Colossal and order a dodo, order a kiwi, even though kiwis are still very much alive. But in that case, it seems like it functions more as an excuse. But in the other case, the more worrying case is whether some of these people really did think, oh, the technology is going to exactly bring back this species. It is more okay to allow for extinction. And so we've said that there needs to be a real caution around the communication in these technologies. There's no evidence that they're immediately going to cause a moral hazard. And if we police them too hard on just the assumption that it's going to happen, it could diminish some good uses of the technology. But equally, they need to be really careful about actually being clear about these things not being an exact replica of the species. You're still going to have a significant loss. They can never be recreated in their entirety.
So the worry about moral hazard on the data that you've come up with, and it sounds like on the data to do with environmental policy as well, might be overstated. But at the same time, you're focusing on this correlation of people being less worried about extinction, and that might be related to having an unrealistically optimistic view about what de-extinction is.
Exactly. So I think we need to be very clear that the optimistic sunshine and lollipops version is just not possible. The technology can do really interesting things. It can bring back lost genetic variation. It could possibly bring back ecological functions to ecosystems by having organisms that can do unique things. But, you know, we need to be clear that these aren't going to bring back species in their entirety.
I realize this is a little bit outside the scope of the research project you undertook, but there are a lot of these de-extinction-like projects out there. Chris, from what you've seen, are there some projects which do this job well in terms of communications that actually do make clear that what they're achieving shouldn't really be regarded as solving the problem of extinction? And what's the range of communications out there?
Yeah, I think there's a real range, and it differs often in settings. So an example we use of really clear communication is, I mentioned these projects using backbreeding, so just selectively breeding. So the Auroch 2.0 project is where they are taking cattle around the world and trying to rebreed ancient cattle. And they're very clear, they're creating an ecological proxy. Colossal has at times been clear in their communication, but at times have shifted to making more accessible statements. The one I cite, I never expected for a research paper to listen to 3 hours of Joe Rogan, but Beth Shapiro of Colossal was talking to Joe Rogan about the Direwolf announcements. And so in there, she says things which are much more like, we created a direwolf because we genetically modified grey wolves. And, you know, I get that you want to be accessible to different audiences, but I do think in these cases, you need to be very cautious about your communication, because the way that the public might interpret the moral salience of these things.
Chris, it's really interesting work. And the fact that you're willing to listen to a 3-hour Joe Rogan podcast shows just how committed you are to your research. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra. And just for the record, I'm not going to start skateboarding because I think it would make me extinct.
Good to hear.
That's Chris Lane, Research Fellow in the Department of Philosophy at Macquarie University, co-author of the recently published study in biological conservation, which is called De-Extinction and the Risk of Moral Hazard.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.